The Messy Game Room, Episode 9, Pepto Bismol Doll Baby.
You don't want to do it. You don't even want to introduce ourselves at all, either?
Yeah, I'll tell you what. You do too much.
Okay. This is Mike.
This is Marshall.
All right.
Columbia Block Games. You ready to go into the Columbia Block Games?
Sure. So we talked about Hammond Scott, so now let's talk about Richard III.
Richard III. This game we've been waiting on for 2 years now.
Yep. Now, I will say that we've been telling people we weren't doing a show. We were waiting for this to come out.
And we've been sick.
But I would all, I mean, that's a valid reason, but I also, yeah, we were like, you had all your, and I had like a sore throat that lasted like a week. There was just no way I could have done it.
So
I totally didn't like, yeah, let's just wait till we get that.
Richard III came in. 2009, Columbia Games, Jerry Taylor, and Grant Dalgleish. Did I pronounce that right?
I guess. Originally, it was called Wars of the Roses.
Yes, and now it's Richard III, The Wars of the Roses.
Yeah.
Some other games that they've done, Hammer the Scots and Crusader Rex. And admittedly, we're fans of Hammer the Scots. Crusader Rex, not so much.
I think we, well, I'm going to say we have not given Crusader Rex the... Well, we didn't even...
We played it once, we weren't wowed by it.
Yeah, but we gave up playing it.
Yeah,
but I think we didn't feel like trying to learn a new game at that point.
So we got our copy of Richard III. It was lovingly stickered. Actually, I'm ahead of myself. We both downloaded the rules and were reading the rules.
I actually read the rules ahead of time.
Yeah, me too. And wasn't holding high hopes for this game. To me, it looked like...
Even, like reading the rules, you weren't.
Reading the rules, I thought, this is going to suck.
Nah, I thought it sounded cool.
And let me just say, this is not a review. This is our first impressions.
Because we want to play it some more.
We want to play it some more. So, I read the rules, you read the rules. The game came in, stickered the blocks, lacquered the blocks, got out the plexiglass, and you were coming down on a Friday night. I cooked some food. And I thought, well, I'll go ahead and set the game up. I had spoken to you earlier in the day. You said you wanted to be the... Why don't you tell us about this time period? What exactly is going on?
Well, you asked me what side I wanted to be. Now, and I was like, I don't know. And I picked the Lancastrian. I don't know why. Did you tell me they had red blocks beforehand? I think I just picked them just for that. I mean, I really had no... Like, yeah, we play Hammond Scots. I like being the English.
Yes.
But I didn't really. I just randomly picked the House of Lancaster.
Can you give us some background on the time period? Or a brief synopsis? Or don't put us to sleep, but what in the hell is going on here?
Well, the game's name meant that Richard III. Well, we didn't really get to him, did we?
No. Like,
he never. Or the wars, there was this guy, Henry the VI. Yeah, Henry the VI. And he was kind of doofus. Like, in the. Like. The rules have his picture. What did you say? He looks like an asshole, jackass, or whatever.
Probably jackass.
Yeah. No one really liked him. And he was considered to be a weak king. And he was deposed in favor of Edward IV, who came from the House of York. And Richard III was Edward IV's brother. So when Edward IV died, he had two sons, but neither of them were old enough. The oldest one wasn't old enough to become king. So normally you would have like a regent, I think they call it, who runs everything until the king's old enough. Well, Edward IV's wife's family apparently didn't like his brother, Richard III, or Richard. So he was getting kind of, because during this time period, it was like, I mean, to me, like reading the book about it, it's like the mafia, like, somebody takes over, and everybody who was allied with the other guy, they all get killed. They all get whacked. So he was getting worried for his own safety, really. So he made him, got himself crowned King Richard III, had the two Edward IV's sons were killed. Now, eventually, Richard III is killed in battle, and then it's Henry VII, the Lancastrian guy, takes over. And also, he marries somebody from the House of York.
To kind of bring the two factions together.
Yeah, but he's the first of the Tudor dynasty. So, because after him comes the big fat Henry VIII. So, anyway,
it follows the timeline of another game we've played recently, Kingmaker.
Right. Well, Kingmaker's about the same stuff. Yeah, that's the, yeah, yeah, tell you, compares. Something I didn't like about Kingmaker, it was like, you get the heir, and then you, it's like to win the game, you had to be controlling the last surviving heir. So, like, there were these times when we were playing that, like, if you had more than one, like, well, kill off the other two. You know, this didn't make any sense to me. Well, Richard III didn't like that. Like, the object of the game is at the end. Now, you can auto-victory by killing off all the opponent's heirs.
We're getting ahead of ourselves.
But I like how there isn't that, like, we weren't running around killing off people we actually had.
Although, you can't do that.
I didn't see that.
You can kill a couple people.
No, you can kill them. They die in the battle.
No, you can kill them if they... We'll get into all that. So,
the object of the game, though, is at the end of the third campaign, if your side has the king, then you win.
Yeah. But we're still ahead of ourselves.
All right, go ahead.
So you were the House of Lancaster.
Right.
Red blocks.
Right.
And you started in England as the...
That's right, because...
You were the king.
Right.
I, as the House of York, the White Blocks, started in exile in France and Ireland.
Yeah.
So when I set the game up, I was like, oh, I like this already. Here my pieces are actually off the map. And here your pieces are already established.
There's no white blocks on the map yet?
Not at all. So anything I had to, Fortress England is what it was kind of like. So I like that automatically, starting from that position.
Now, another difference from Hammer of the Scots, I believe, is what you do with your action points.
Yes, we'll get into all that.
Well, I want to ask you, though, because you're saying you had no white blocks on the map.
No, none.
But were there...
They're in exile.
Were there empty... Because you can use your action points to recruit nobles. Were there areas on the map that were free of my blocks so you could start recruiting white blocks into them?
I believe so.
Okay.
So the game is played over a series of three turns. You get seven cards per...
Three
campaigns. You get seven cards per campaign.
And each card play, they classify that as a turn.
Correct. And you have action points on each turn, or on each card. It's just like Hammer of the Scots, and there's 19 cards... With point values, 1 to 4?
Were there ones? It definitely goes up to 4.
And then 6 event cards.
But a difference, some of the event cards also have action points.
Yes. So what you're doing is you're playing these cards. Now, like Hammer of the Scots, you can break up the action points by moving, use 1 point to move one.
You're activating an area.
You're activating an area. You're not activating blocks. What's different in Hammer of the Scots is in this game you have a pool of stand-up, face-up blocks at full strength that you can bring onto the board in friendly areas.
Yeah, they have to come on. Well, they have to come on where their home area is, so it has to match their
shield. Which is kind of neat. So you've got, not only do you have to move from area to area and attack, but you have to get blocks from the pile in front of you onto the board. And I think it costs, a point a block or whatever.
Yep.
Now, just like Hammer of the Scots, in this game, they're nobles that change sides, although it's a lot harder to make a noble change.
Which I liked.
Yeah, if a noble dies in battle in this game, the owner gets the noble back.
Well, there's many blocks that don't change.
That's true, too. You have, 5 air blocks?
Oh, yeah, well, let's talk about the kind of blocks you got.
We're all over the place. Well, and that's my fault.
Well, no, we've described... Like what you do with your action points, but the kind of you have your heirs, which have a little crown symbol on them.
You have, what, five of those, right?
Yep. Then you have, like, your nobles.
Loyal nobles, which have a rose symbol.
Right. So they cannot be turned.
They cannot be turned, and if they fall in battle, they are gone from the game. Put them back in the bag.
Yep. And then there's the nobles that can be turned. But how do you do that?
You have
to hammer the Scots. When you're fighting a battle, you kill off a block, it immediately comes over to your side.
It's your
even
noble.
In that same battle.
Yeah, right? It's your noble.
Right.
From that point on.
Well, in this game.
In this game, you either have to have the king, because that can change from campaign to campaign. What side is king? Lancaster starts as the king. York starts as a pretender. If you have the pretender, the king, or Warwick.
I know it's Warwick.
Yeah. If any of those three are present in battle, instead of taking a battle turn, they can choose an enemy noble, and the enemy nobles have a loyalty rating on them. 1 to 5.
Okay.
1 being more likely they are to defect. And that's how many dice you roll.
Because you have to roll those die.
You roll those die. So if you're trying to get a noble to defect that's a 2 power, you roll 2 die. If they're both even, noble defects at the current strength.
So all the die you roll have to come up even.
Yeah, it doesn't matter what the numbers are as long as they're even. So it's a lot harder to switch a noble in this game. But really, that ain't what the game's about. It's about the heirs. Because some of them can switch, but.
So
Clarence and Exeter, I know, can switch. So each side has 5 heirs to the actual, either the pretender or the king.
But
right?
they don't all start.
No, 3 start on the board. 2 start off the board, kind of as heirs in waiting. And as an heir dies, your next senior heir comes on.
Right. So I start. Lancaster has Henry VI.
Yes.
Which he was doing good there for a little while, but then he died.
Which happened.
So then my next strongest guy, or the next, well...
But you still stay as king, and I still stay as pretender.
Right. But see, and each heir has a number, like, in seniority, like the lower, the more senior.
Yes.
So actually, the next senior guy wasn't on the table yet, which I can't remember who it was.
So somebody else had to be king.
So, yeah, but the most senior guy on it became the king. But then we play through the action.
You play through your first campaign of 7 cards. And then you do a...
Just to clarify, the cards are dealt out, and you can look at them.
Yeah.
And you pick each round, you decide which card that... You don't have to pick them all in what order you're going to play at the beginning of the...
This ain't Space Alert or...
This mega sure... It's for the Euro gamers out there.
But, so at the end of the 7th card play, you go into... And each...
The political phase, they call it?
Yeah, the political phase where it's a lot different to Hammer the Scots, but it's kind of similar. The nobles go home, but you have the
But the very first thing you do
is check for
is who's
king.
Determine who's going to be the king now.
Right. And if you have control of the most nobles, then you become king if your side does. Which happened. I became king as the York faction.
So at this point...
It's
all my heirs
go into exile.
Go into exile.
So now I'm on the map and you're gone, right?
Well, no. My nobles that are on the map return to their home areas.
But your heirs go into
the
exile.
The heirs have to go to exile.
And my heirs got to stay in their home areas.
Right.
And then all your blocks that like might have died in battle that you put back into the pool in front of you that you couldn't bring on in certain turns or that campaign get flipped back up. If all the blocks on the board get reset to full strength,
right.
Which is different.
Right.
I tell you what we did mention is the key difference in this game is battle hits.
Oh, yeah. Well, all right. So, like I said, Henry VI died in battle. So how are the battles played?
Battles are different.
All right, for those of you who never played a block game before, the blocks, their strength, which is how many... die they roll in battle is determined by
diamonds at the top of
at the top of the square. So as they get hit, you rotate the block and they get weaker. So the strongest obviously is 4. But if that guy takes 1 hit, you roll it, you flip it over, so when he goes to fight again he's only got 3.
Yes.
So now on Hammer the Scots, the strongest block takes each hit in succession.
No.
Yes. You deal out four hits. You deal out four hits, and I have a four and, let's say, two threes. A four takes the one, but now at this point, I can pick whichever.
Yes. Yeah, well, hammer the Scots. Now, that's very important. Yeah. The first one to take a hit is the most powerful in Hammer of the Scots and Crusader Rex, I believe.
And then you do each hit separately.
And then, so if you've got three and you've got three more hits to allocate, you get to decide who takes the hits and how, you know, break them up however you want.
So now they're all three.
Yeah.
So then you take one then to two. Well, now you get to pick between those other two, the two remaining ones that are still with. Yeah, it always has to be the strongest one.
Yes, the strongest.
But that's Hammer of the Scots. In this game, all the hits go to the strongest block at that time.
Period. They're none of this, whatever strongest now, taking a step loss, and then, oh, wait, this block over here is more strong. No, that doesn't work like that in this game. When you roll the dice, if you've got a four strength unit and you get four hits, then the strongest opposing block takes all four of those hits. There's no spreading the hits out, which is how kings die, nobles die, and heirs die. Because
which didn't pop up a whole lot, I guess. But when it did, it's like, oh, that was terrible. Because you got to admit, it's hard to, you don't get too many rolls where you're dealing out three hits all at once.
Correct.
But man, when it does, it's devastating. It feels bad.
Now, if you kill somebody, then and you still got two hits left to allocate, then it goes to the next strongest block, and then that block takes two hits.
Right.
So it's.
Because when it happened to me, I had the French block, which is pretty strong. It's like a B. Again, for those of you who are not familiar with these games, you have the strength points, but then also each block is rated with a letter and a number. So if a block is B, the letters are the order that they attack. So A's go first, then B's, then C's. If it's two A's, the defender always gets the hit first. And the number is the number they have to roll equal to or less than to get a hit. So a B3, he's going after the A's, but he has to roll three or less. And if it's like strength four, so strength four, B3 a block, will roll four die, looking for threes or less.
Unless he's defending this home area.
And if he's there's some bonuses like defending your home area,
defending the crown,
the king in a crown space, then that B3 gets bumped up to a B4 and he needs a four or less.
So you got three campaigns, and then the kingship can switch at the end of each of three campaigns. Whoever's the king at the end of the third campaign wins the game.
Right. Or, like I said, the auto victory, if all the opponent's heirs are killed,
there's nobody left.
Then you win.
Which is what happened in our game.
But, well, it will get there.
Okay.
So we played through the first campaign. You became the king.
As correct. I went from pretender to king.
Then in the second, I remember in the second campaign, I felt I didn't have a great hand. Wasn't terrible because I couldn't mulligan it.
You can mulligan one hand per the three campaigns in it if you're under 13.
But you were winning out of the first campaign, and I felt that after the second campaign, you would only strengthen your position.
I agree with that.
So, because I remember we're going into the third one, and I'm thinking, like, there's no way. I was thinking, there's no way I can get enough of your nobles to win by having my guy crowned king.
You could kill them and get them off the board. They don't count.
But there's too many of them. Like, I wouldn't. Right. Like, you had like 12, and I had like 6 or 7. And I just didn't feel like I was going to get that swing. But I had four heirs. I had two heirs alive, but two that hadn't come on or something like that. But you only had two left. So I was kind of thinking, well, I could try to kill his heirs.
But I'm never going to find them.
But I was thinking, well, I knew, well, because the guy who becomes king, you, that's the other thing with a block game. You're sitting across the table. All I can see is, like, Marshall's pieces are little white plain blocks. I don't know what's on the other side. With the exception of the king, when switches to the king, you have to say, okay, he's the king now, and this is where he's at. So I knew the king was like over down like in the London area, right?
Yes, I kept him close to London.
So, and at first I was kind of thinking, now I'm really in a bad spot, because all the Lancastrian nobles, when they go home, they're all in the north of England. except for one guy at Oxford, who's actually one of my better blocks. He's right down in the south, like surrounded by you. So, you know, we get the cards out. I'm thinking, there's no way I'm going to win this game. But then I wouldn't, and this is when I really loved the game. I forgot, I kind of wasn't thinking about my guys in exile. I got two heirs, which are pretty decent blocks, and I had the French block. I was thinking, well, I can move them on and land them in the south somewhere. And that, because like reading this book, like that's what really happened. Like, they go into exile for like a few years, and they scrape up some money and get some troops together, and they go back to England and try to, you know, get made king or whatever. So, okay, I can bring these guys on in the south. But like Oxford is, I think Marshall's going to kill him right away. So I was like, I'm going to play a four, which like when you play your action points, the higher number goes. If they're tied, the pretender gets to go first. So I knew I was going to be able to go first. So I'm thinking, that's the other thing I liked with the C moves. Like in Hammer of the Scotch, you can only C move with the C move card.
Yeah, and that doesn't come around that often.
Yeah, but in this one, you can... The seas are divided into four areas, like the English Channel, Irish Sea, basically the four sides of England, right, or three.
Three.
Yeah, three sides of England. Now, to move between areas, you need a sea, you need the
you
sea.
Need, I never saw a card. I'm assuming you need a card. You can only move in that sea zone you're in, unless you're coming from exile.
Or you can just use an action point move to make a coastal move.
As long as you stay within the same sea zone.
Now, the only thing is, I only had one block that was on the... Well, Oxford's on the coast. And I only had one of my other blocks on the coast. But I'm like, all right, I'm going to use one point. I'm going to move that block down there. So hopefully they'll be able to fight off your attack and keep him alive. And I used my other 3 points. I landed my two heirs in the French block, like, you know, down the south of England somewhere. So I'm thinking, all right, this is the best I can do. And I was thinking, I'll try to bring the Scots down and try to get you... Get those two heirs, you know, cornered or something. But I'm really thinking that he's probably going to win. No way I can do it. You, so what did you do?
Brought both heirs right into that.
You attacked me. I couldn't believe it.
With just those two heirs. Yeah. Nobody else.
Why'd you do that?
It smelled blood in the water. I thought, yeah, these guys, no way they're going to die. I kind of got the king in here. No problem. What you don't forget about, though, is the allocate and hit rule.
I was rolling good.
You were rolling. You even said that. I rolled well. So, like, one roll, it's like, oh, shit, I've got one guy in. What else I like about this game, you can't retreat on the first turn of battle.
That's right. Because
a lot of times, and I'm not sure, I got to go back and reread the rules to Hammer the Scots. I know a lot of times we'll just send a block into battle. Because I can do that with Braveheart a lot. I better check the rules on that. I'm like, oh, what blocks does Mike have over there? Well, since I'm an A block, I can just back out of the battle without having to do anything, just see what you can do. But in this game, you have to stay for the entire... And maybe it's like that in Braveheart.
But what else did you do? That was the only time we did the loyalty roll.
I tried to do a loyalty roll because I knew that if I could take your noble to my side, it would give me somebody else to take hits.
We came in, and I went... first.
And it was just a two.
See, that was the bad thing, because you attacked me. So I was going to go before you, and Oxford was defending his home area. So he's a B4 now.
Yes.
So I think I killed
the first guy.
Who
was the king, so they had to make the next guy king.
Yeah. So that right away.
And instead of fighting with him, I decided to make a loyalty roll.
Which is, because at first I'm like, why'd you do that? But then, like, that's the only thing you could have done.
Yeah, to take hits. Because I wouldn't have been able to kill both your guys, but I thought if I can get one of them to my side, that's somebody else that can take a hit, and I might be able to at least limp out.
But you failed your loyalty roll.
Right. I had to roll two dice. They had to both be even. They were both odd.
And before you could take your opportunity.
And that was my hit, and I couldn't leave yet.
So you couldn't leave yet.
No.
But you also couldn't leave until your next turn, but I get to go first.
Yep.
And I was rolling like a total of seven dice.
You just crushed me.
Yeah.
And that was
it. So then he dies. I can't believe the game has ended like that.
Yeah, with the blocks. So I heard you say, and we just give you a rough overview, and we've only played the game once, but I heard you say that's when I fell in love with the game. So you do love the game.
Oh, of course.
Do you? Well.
I would rather play this than Hammer the Scots.
Oh, definitely for now. Here's what I was thinking, especially from stuff I was reading online. I was getting mixed reviews from it. And I was, as I read the rules, I thought, oh, this is going to be like Poor Man's Hammer of the Scots. This isn't Poor Man's Hammer of the Scots at all. This is a little more challenging, at least now. It's definitely a little more rules heavy and a little more option heavy.
See, other people said like it's simpler, but
I don't see it being simpler at all. Do you?
I disagree. I guess especially if you're maybe this is because we're so used to Hammer of the Scots, the differences kind of stand out. So like, well, this is extra stuff we have to learn. I don't know. But I think there's more to it. I tell you something else I like because you brought up Braveheart. I feel there's Uber blocks in Hammer of the Scots.
There is Uber blocks. That's a good point.
That and the goddamn Vikings.
Which I try to use in Hammer of the Scots.
And they're very deadly. But while in this game, I didn't feel... I mean, there's stronger blocks, but there isn't like one single block that's like an absolute badass,
In Hammer of the Scots, of course, William Wallace is a badass block. And if I can hold on the mid-game and somehow bring the Scottish King on the board and William Wallace, well, I'm just...
Because he's also an A, right?
Yeah, he's an A4, too. A2 or A3.
Who are the
four pips?
The block you had with the crossbow.
Were they?
We never finished talking about the different kinds of blocks.
No, there's nobles. There's churches.
There's churches, which would count as nobles, and then there's also the levies, which are like your basic.
Which you raised in the city.
Right.
I was shocked because after what I'd read and reading rules. We started playing, and I was like, oh, this is going to be great. This is a great game.
And I love the coastal sea move.
I tell you, I think there's a lot more to it than Hammer of the Scots.
Yeah.
I really do, and I'm really, really looking forward to playing more of it. And I'm not so sure, I hate to say this, I don't know how much more Hammer of the Scots is going to get played.
Maybe it'll have a nostalgic appeal. But yeah, like right, certainly right now, if you said... Well, we want to play Hammer of the Scots. I'm like, well, why don't we just play Richard III?
And I know what everybody's going to say. Oh, you're just loving it because it's new. Well, I don't believe that because we didn't feel this way about Crusader Rex.
Yeah, we didn't like that.
You know what I mean? I didn't feel this way about Crusader Rex. I'm not all obsessed with playing Crusader Rex. I tell you what, this game's got a lot of potential. Certainly a worthwhile purchase. And I was really pleasantly surprised.
And what did you think about, because you're very good at doing this. You surround, you love having somebody get eliminated because you can't retreat.
Yeah, I do love that.
Because you did that where I attacked you and you moved all your blocks, like you used all your moves to basically put one block all around me. But I was thinking that didn't work out.
That was something. I think you killed everybody.
Well, I won the battle, and then I thought that left you spread out.
It did.
So,
well, we're still.
But but then again, I was thinking that, so I took a couple of those single blocks, but they were your levies anyway. Yeah. They didn't really matter.
I thought there's a lot to it. I don't see where it was just, you know, a redheaded stepson to.
Oh, and the movement's different.
Slightly.
Because. Hammer of the Scots did.
Some of the blocks, but I got thinking about that. Hammer of the Scots have movement on the blocks, but right. Most of them it's only two anyway.
But there are a few, like the English. The
Braveheart can get three.
Yeah, the little horse guys.
More
for the English
three.
Go three, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, in this one, you either move one or two spades.
That's correct.
Well, there's a card you play, Forced March, where you get to move three, but that's a card you have to play for that.
I tell you what, a lot there to it. It's definitely going to take more than one playing. And, Hammer of the Scots... Setting here, taking the long view of it right now as it sets, Hammer of Scots almost looks, I don't want to say, Hammer of Scots is my favorite game.
Yeah.
But Hammer of the Scots almost looks.
Well, to me, this takes the Hammer of the Scots and, like, improves upon it.
Yeah. Hammer of the Scots almost looks stunted. Maybe. I don't know. I love Hammer of the Scots, but I definitely want to play this game some more.
Yeah.
And I can't recommend it enough after one play. It was excellent.
Can't wait to play it again.
You know, we waited so long for it. And that's another thing I want to touch on. We waited so long for this game. And as I got to looking at the map when I first got, I was like, God damn, this map's beautiful. These blocks are beautiful. But reading the rules, I just didn't get the warm and fuzzy.
I agree with you with the way it looked. But then also when I was reading it, like, this sounds really neat.
I just didn't see that coming.